Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
U.S. beef buyers will see lower import costs after President Trump signed an executive order removing the extra 40% tariff he imposed on Brazilian ag products earlier this year. The change takes effect retroactively to November 13th. It reflects early progress in trade discussions between the White House and Brazilian President Lula. It's been ending months of elevated duties that added to already tight protein supplies. The order restores lower tariff rates on key products. That includes fresh and frozen beef, coffee, fruit, fertilizer, and the items faced one of the highest penalty rates under Trump's July trade action, which initially imposed additional duties over concerns tied to Brazil's domestic political actions. Importers will now receive refunds where applicable, and the administration has posted a revised tariff annex. Now, for the beef sector, the rollback significant. Brazil, the world's largest beef exporter and a major supplier of lean manufacturing beef, it's used in U.S. processing regionally. Australia has been filling part of that gap with low tariff access and strong export volumes supported by robust U.S. demand for lean, high-protein meat. The tariff revision is expected to rebalance the competitiveness among the major suppliers. Well, corn shippers will see lower freight costs this marketing year after both BNSF Railway and Union Pacific reduce many of their rail tariff rates for 2025-2026. The changes come as producers and merchandisers work through tight margins and rising delivery risk. It makes transportation savings more valuable heading into winter. BNSF left Pacific Northwest export rates unchanged, but introduced steep cuts on routes serving Hereford, Texas, and Mexico, especially from Nebraska origins. Rates from Edison, Nebraska dropped by $540 per car to Hereford and by $340 per car to Mexico. Elevators across Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota saw $200 per car reductions to Hereford. Union Pacific followed with broad $150 per car reductions across most domestic and Mexico routes. It includes lower costs from Nebraska to California and from Illinois to the Texas border. Hereford, Texas, the center of the Fed beef business in the U.S. Agricultural credit conditions across the 10th District weakened again in the third quarter. That is, crop producers faced another season of tight margins. Now, according to the Federal Reserve's regional survey based out of Kansas City, lenders in crop-heavy states like Kansas, Nebraska, and Missouri reported lower farm income and softer repayment rates, with as many as 40% noting declines. Mountain State lenders also reporting weaker finances tied to low wheat and dairy prices. By contrast, cattle-dependent regions like Oklahoma experienced stronger incomes, improved repayment expectations, and steadier loan quality as record cattle prices continue to bolster revenues. It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Our topic this week is really addressing a series of articles that we'll have coming up here over the next few months that have to do with building back better through generating the right kind of replacement heifers that become our next generation of cows.
Dr. Mark Johnson, Oklahoma State Beef Breeding Specialist.
In spite of some recent market volatility, the fundamentals, this current status of our nation's beef industry and our beef markets can be summed up in a few brief points. We've got the smallest national cow inventory we've had since 1961. It looks like we'll have the smallest calf crops going into the production chain this year and next year that we've seen since the 1950s. We have the strongest consumer demand that we have seen in decades, and we have very little evidence of heifer retention to become the next generation of cows, and that's added on top of several years of good statistics showing that we haven't been keeping very many heifers. In short, the robust markets that we see right now for all classes of cattle and beef the product are not going to go away anytime soon. It looks like we're going to experience them through the end of this decade. Why is that? Well, if we keep all of our heifers back now, the weaned heifer calves that were born this spring, were 2 years down the road before they wean a calf. Those calves are a year to a year and a half delayed beyond that before they become beef by the time they go through the production chain. So these market fundamentals, these results of drought, threats of New World screwworm, the resilience and good management of cattlemen across the country, the job we have done of improving the additive genetic merit so that every cut of beef is a more consistent, high-quality, tremendous eating experience for the American consumer, have all led us to this point that we're at. We are going to have to develop more replacement heifers. How fast our nation's cow herd regrows remains a mystery. But the reality, in the words of my colleague Darrell Peel, cows can't be made out of spare parts. This low cow inventory we have is not going to go away anytime soon. Cows are going to age out of production. We have the opportunity, through a systems approach, taking a look at our own unique cow-calf operation, if we are motivated by long-term sustainable profitability, we can address breeding and selection goals, we can address mating decisions, we can take a look at when we intend to market cattle, how we want to develop those replacement females to set ourselves up for years to come in an industry. So that's what we've got on the horizon. We'll break these topics down week to week. Intend this to follow up Dr. Henley's spot-on sunup last week when he addressed heifer selection, and come at this from all the angles that permit us to generate an even better cow herd and literally building back better.
Dr. Mark Johnson, Oklahoma State Beef Breeding Specialist, online at sunup.okstate.edu. USDA's latest cattle on-feed report out, the on-feed number, 11,706,000. That's 98% right in line with trade expectations. Placements at 2,039,000, 90%, again, right in line with trade expectations. And marketings at just under 1.7 million. That's 92% at the bottom end of the range of estimates. It's Agriculture Today.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
At Wiley Implement and Spray Center, we are here to keep your Case IH tractors, planters, sprayers, and other implements in tip-top shape this season. Whether you need in-shop or in-field service, Wiley has the factory-trained technicians to keep your equipment running with genuine Case IH parts. Give us a call today or go to WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Agriculture Today.
Outlook for the fourth quarter is sort of for more of the same, in fact, slightly worse, as 83% of lenders expect further decreases in farm income in the fourth quarter. That's following a harvest.
Joe Mann is Director of Regional Outreach with the Minneapolis Federal Reserve.
Outlook for loan demand and other credit conditions is, again, more of the same. Majority are expecting loan demand to increase in the fourth quarter of this year, again, consistent with falling incomes. Renewal activity also expected to increase, and nearly two-thirds of lenders expecting repayment rates to go down over the fourth quarter this year. One little bit of good news that I can point to is continued relief on the interest rate front. You can see overall rates have been ticking down over the last few years, consistent with the loosening in credit conditions by the Federal Reserve. We see other interest rates move in tandem, and farm interest rates have ticked down from their highs that they reached in 2023 and 2024. But overall, they're still at pretty elevated levels. So this is good news, but it's still quite a bit more expensive to finance the purchase of a machinery, purchase of land. And I don't actually have real estate loans on this, but you see the same trend in real estate loans. And then overall operating loans, just the sort of liquidity lending that goes on in the farm industry. Those rates are still quite a bit elevated, quite a bit higher than they were in the early part of this decade and for a long period prior to that. So some relief, but still overall high interest rates. And that brings me to the land values picture. A little bit mixed, as you can see across the region, but overall land values continuing to trend up on a year over year basis. This is consistent, by the way, also with the data that the USDA released in August on land values. You can find that on their website, but pretty similar results for the states in our region. These are non-irrigated land values. We asked the lenders sort of what is the average value for an acre of good farmland in your area. And across the region, on average, it went up 4%. You can see higher growth in Minnesota and South Dakota, just about flat in North Dakota. And we did see a decrease in the district portions of Wisconsin and then also in Montana. But I do want to caution the response rate is a little bit smaller in those areas. Would like to know a little bit more about what's going on behind some of those responses. The USDA's data for those states is not, it doesn't show as much of a decrease. In fact, it was flat to slightly up in those states. Across the region, though, still seeing growth in land values. By contrast, cash rents generally down across the region, with the exception of North Dakota and South Dakota. Across the region, just about a 1% decline in the cash rental rate on an acre of farmland. Kind of an interesting contrast, given that we've seen continued strong growth in land values, but cash rents going down. There's some interesting, there's kind of different metrics. I think cash rents may be a little bit more responsive to conditions in agriculture. Can talk more about that in the Q&A if folks have questions about that. But again, that's the overall headline picture. Land values continue to trend up and are, in fact, at record levels. In fact, even if you look at some of these measures adjusted for inflation, still at very strong levels. And in fact, record levels in a lot of our states in our region, particularly North Dakota, really kind of at a high watermark. After trending down for a few years during the middle to the late part of last decade when farm incomes were weaker, they bounced right back up after the pandemic and have continued to trend upward. So that's kind of the overall, the usual results that we present. Again, not a great, not a super happy picture. The outlook is not super positive. Another challenge that we hear about among the market conditions and international trade and some of the other challenges we hear about, one that we've been hearing about for a while, is the lack of availability of farm labor.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The 2025 Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show is coming December 2nd through 4th at the Amarillo Civic Center. See nearly 500 exhibitors featuring the latest tractors, technology, and equipment. Attend CEU sessions with agriculture experts, network with fellow producers, and find great deals on seeds, feed, and fencing. Don't miss it. Mark your calendars for the 2025 Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show, December 2nd through 4th at the Amarillo Civic Center.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
One of the outstanding things still left that we're hopeful will still materialize and believe it will is the notion that the administration, both the president himself, Secretary Rollins, Secretary of Ag, the Secretary of Treasury, Secretary Bessent, has made made notions that they would provide some additional assistance for some type of mitigation on trade aid because of how we have lost market share or market prices, just given some of the negotiations that have ensued over trade deals in the last 6 months to a year.
Cody Bessent is CEO of Lubbock-based Plains Cotton Growers on the idea of more disaster relief.
Which is a good thing, and I've said this in previous settings. It's a positive thing that they're willing to step up to the plate and provide some much-needed additional assistance, and that allows them to continue to negotiate from a very good position of strength on these trade deals and not be beholden to some of these other countries during these times of negotiation standpoint. So we'll see how that transpires, how that turns out, but that is some of the ongoing things that are that have happened recently. Other thing is that Congress is back in session. They'll still continue to try to take up some appropriation measures in the Senate this week. They've got some other kind of dynamics in the House they're looking at. You've seen some retirements as of late. So trying to figure out how the game plays going into the end of the year, whether they do an end of the year spending package and how that plays into other policy initiatives that the industry is working on, such as the Buy America Cotton Act, which is a huge critical component for trying to expand and enhance the domestic consumption of cotton derived from the U.S.
But when it comes to these assistance programs, they're kind of complicated.
No, I think it's very complicated, and that's what I would advise others that are seeing kind of this initial release and are trying to kind of figure out some of the details. We are certainly still digesting what it all means, what some examples would be for the cotton industry specifically, since that's who we serve. But one thing I would definitely advise is for people to take their time, give it just a minute, you know, a week to 10 days. Let us kind of get through the Thanksgiving Day process, and we'll have a lot more amicable information that's been vetted, that's very accurate. I know there's been a lot of anticipation on how this will work, and grateful for the release of the information, but it is going to take a few moments to really digest how this program plays out and to let offices get fully trained up and how the program will be implemented. Certainly take your time with them, because this is going to be a new program, especially as they are now coming back to work after being furloughed for 40 plus days. So just be very courteous and kind and complimentary to their efforts as well. But ultimately we should have a lot more details, a lot more definitive information as we go through the end of the month of November on into first part of December. And there's plenty of runway. That's the thing. I know folks are very anxious to receive some anticipated income. That will still be a great opportunity that will come before even the end of the year to close out some of the cash flow challenges that folks have been seeing. But also the program again itself goes through April the 30th of 2026. So there's a lengthy time for this program to be studied and looked at in each individual grower operation. We'll have some time to do that once more definitive information and more overall summary of information is provided to.
And this is Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Let's talk about Cotton Research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The data that I'm going to be discussing today with your listeners is really derived from the Kansas State University Focus on Feedlots. So the Focus on Feedlots.
Kansas State Beef Specialist Justin Wagner on how death loss in the cattle feeding industry has changed over the past 30 years.
Some of the listeners may be familiar with it, but essentially it's a feedlot performance and closeout survey that we've conducted at Kansas State University for a number of years. Actually, the Focus on Feedlots, the history of it goes back well into the 1970s. It started out as an extension newsletter that captured some baseline data, some benchmarking, if you will, for the feedlot industry. So it's just simply a monthly survey of 5 to 6 feed yards, mostly in western Kansas. We gather some performance information, you know, days on feed, end weights, exit weights, average daily gain, death losses you mentioned there. Also record some other performance data like place cost to gain and a few other commodity prices and some things like that. And so what's really special about the Focus on Feedlots, if you will, is we've got the data electronically archived for about the last 34 years. And so having a 34-year data set to work with feed yard level data that's recorded both, you know, animal performance as well as some commodity prices, that's just a really incredibly valuable data set, I think, for, you know, other academics. It's widely used to refer back to that, as it's really the only publicly available source of data of its kind. So it's really a special data set to work with here at K-State.
So an obvious follow-up question is, what else is contributing to the death loss?
So as you really think about the data that we collect with the Focus on Feedlots, it's yard-level data. We don't have a good amount of detail to be able to dive much deeper. What I tell you is I think there's a number of different research groups. We talked earlier about the research that's really going on to understanding this issue. I think that's where we really start to find the answers in terms of, you know, what the Focus on Feedlot data can tell us. Really, we can't dive too much deeper into it. We just don't have that depth of data to be able to use this data set for that purpose. But I do think the real value of this data set is just that 30-year snapshot of feedlot information and just really capturing that historical perspective and, you know, starting to understand some of those relationships like the seasonality.
Which then begs an even bigger question, and that is whether or not we can reverse this. Can we decrease the death loss?
You know, you really want to be an optimist, but when you look at our data, it's certainly increased over time. I would hope that we can certainly start to do that and start to see those rates start to flatline. You know, will we ever get back to those historically low death loss rates of less than 1%? You know, that in aggregate, that's going to be, you know, that may be a challenge, but I think that's a very good goal that we certainly need to get to. I think the other take-home message that's within this data set, you know, as producers are looking at running break-evens or projection analysis, right? You know, what do we factor in for an acceptable level of death loss? And so that really warrants some consideration when you have a larger data set like this that would certainly say, hey, you know, maybe 1%, you know, isn't the number to use, but 1.5% might be, you know, a better number to use to some respects, or to look at those true averages over time when we run those type of projections.
Kansas State Beef Specialist Justin Wagner. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
This is Agriculture Today.
We've asked this question a couple of times. In fact, I'm showing you a comparison between the results of a similar question that we asked in 2023 when we were hearing about this a lot versus 2025.
Joe Mann is Director of Regional Outreach with the Minneapolis Federal Reserve.
And what's interesting here is, though we've heard a lot of anecdotes about farm labor becoming more scarce, obviously during seasonal labor, farming operations depend quite a bit on migrant labor. and so some of the reduction in immigration rates to the U.S., there's a lot of concern among producers that that might impact the labor supply. But if you compare to 2023, what you see is actually the percentage of these lenders that are telling us that this is a serious challenge is actually down. And the share telling us it's a minor challenge is up. Another thing I'll note here is, in neither period did lenders tell us that this was the most important challenge facing producers. So I think they have, even when conditions are relatively strong, as they were still in 2023, kind of bigger fish to fry. But it still ends up being a pretty serious challenge. But again, the share telling us that it's a serious challenge has come down, which I think is a little bit somewhat surprising. Maybe that's more an indicator of how difficult conditions were in 2023 when the labor market overall in the macro economy was really, really strong. And we've seen labor market conditions overall ease over the last couple of years. So that's just my sort of attempt to interpret these results. I was a little surprised by them given a lot of anecdotes that I've heard from contacts in the industry about how difficult it is securing labor for farm operations. I thought it was a little bit surprising to see this go down. But again, it could be just that the overall labor market is kind of dominating here. And we've seen both an increase, slight increase in unemployment over the last 2 years, but just generally the turnover rates, a lot of the other metrics, job openings are down as well. And so there's been kind of a consistent cooling of the labor market over the last couple of years. And perhaps that's redounding to the benefit, as it were, of some of our farm producers in our region. Again, not to say that the situation is easy. You can see that there's still just about half of them telling us that it's a serious challenge, but it's eased a little bit since 2023. Again, on a year-over-year basis, this is kind of consistent with that. So in 2023, we asked them how labor availability was compared to a year ago, so compared to 2022 in that case. And we had more than a third of them telling us that it was worse. In fact, a small percentage of them, just about 1% at that time, told us that it was much worse. We had nobody this year say that it was much worse, and only one in six told us that it was a little worse. So that's kind of, I think, it's sort of a noteworthy change. And overwhelmingly, the majority, more than three quarters, told us that it was about the same in terms of the availability of farm labor this year versus last year. Also asked some questions about temporary versus permanent, and then livestock versus farming, farm labor. I'm not including those here, but just to kind of generally summarize those for you. Generally a consensus that it's harder to hire permanent or find permanent on-farm labor than it is to find temporary labor right now, and that it's a little bit harder in the livestock space than in the farming space. And maybe that's not surprising because you tend to see, it's particularly in dairy, a lot of the needs for labor are more ongoing permanent labor needs than in farming, obviously, where you need heavy assistance at certain times of the year. So again, kind of a thing to watch, a little bit surprising in my perspective, given a lot of what we've heard from our contacts.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.